You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you the best.
Halford and Bruff. You're listening to Halford and Bruff.
Right circle, down to the Eagle like a chuck in front of shot. He scores! Matthew Tkachuk, a power play goal! It's 4-3 Panthers with 4.3 seconds to go!
And everyone's going to say he got swept. That's not what happened. I watched the game.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Bruff. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintec Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
A-Dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
The Peas, Jason. The Peas are in the Stanley Cup Final for the first time in 27 years.
More importantly, Roberto Luongo back in the finals. Mm-hmm. Everything else is secondary to this.
Stop trying to make this a thing.
No, it's a thing. Look at Twitter. That's like literally what everyone's focused on right now. Not even the Panthers. It's I'm talking about Canucks fans.
Oh, it's funny. I thought people were focused on Matthew Tkachuk.
Mm-hmm. No. All Luongo now. It's all shifted.
Oh, great. Because he was cheering from the little owner suite that they got there?
Yeah.
Also,
why don't you like him?
I do like him.
I just do not think
about Luongo while I'm watching the Panthers.
He insists upon himself. One, it's all I think about. Two, it's the Peas. Get it right. 7 o'clock, Rob Rossi is going to join us from The Athletic in Pittsburgh. On the heels of that very, very detailed expose of the dysfunction that kind of embroiled the Penguins organization and the front office over the last couple of years. Rob Rossi at 7 o'clock. 8 o'clock, Peter Galindo. He's going to join us. Whitecaps, the good part, they did win yesterday, and they advanced to the Canadian Championship against Montreal. The tough part is that there was a very, very scary scene featuring their young, bright, promising midfielder, Ali Ahmed. Although, while it looked scary on the field, he was stretchered off after being down for nearly 15 minutes and unconscious. There were reports late last night that he suffered a concussion. He cleared all protocols, and he was able to travel with the team. So Peter Galindo is going to join us at 8. Rob Rossi at 7. David Amber at 6:30. That's what's happening on the show today. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it? You missed that?
What happened?
What happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. I mentioned it off the top. The story of the evening, the Peas. Yes, the Florida Panthers are on their way to their first Stanley Cup final since 1996. Matthew Tkachuk, who else, scored a power play goal with 4.9 seconds left in regulation to give the Peas a 4-3 win over Carolina. They complete the sweep. They go to the Cup final. Can we hear what the goal sounded like? Matthew Tkachuk with the winner, 4.9 seconds left.
Looks like it had. No, Tkachuk in front! Score! 4.3 to go! It's a series winner! Again! For Matthew Tkachuk!
Matthew Tkachuk is here to chew gum and score big goals. And brother, he is out of gum.
So, what did he do in this series? It was a four-game sweep. He had both overtime goals,
that
right?
That's correct.
And the cool celebration where he was like, let's get out of here.
Twice.
And then in game three, he didn't score a goal, but he had an assist on the only goal of the game in a 1-0 Florida Panthers victory. And then last night, he had two goals, one on the power play. Actually, yeah, they were both on the power play.
Yep.
And the second one was with 4 seconds left to break the tie. The Hurricanes had just tied it up, got a controversial penalty, which we'll talk about in a bit. And then he scores again. So that's a nice series for him.
16 games now in the playoffs, 9 goals, 12 assists. So 21 points in 16 games. 3 overtime winners because he got one against Boston, don't forget.
Right.
Then the buzzer beater with 4.9 seconds left. And amazingly, I'm not sure he's the Conn Smythe favorite.
No, it's Bobrovsky still.
Andy asked this question this morning.
Yeah.
It's remarkable that really, if you want to talk about the Florida Panthers run, I know there are many contributors, but these two guys have been so good, so good, and clutch, consistently clutch, because that was basically
and
an
you
overtime
know what?
Game
the
last
The desire
night.
To receive credit and the Conn Smythe Trophy is going to tear that team apart.
That's right. That's what
it's going to keep them from winning the Stanley Cup.
Well, that and the fact they lifted the Prince of Wales Trophy.
I think it just shows all the young goalies out there just how important goalies are, and that they're always going to be more important than the person that scores the big goal.
Especially
you want to be a goalie when you grow up.
Well, especially
especially when they screw up all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And if you're the backup goalie, it's even better.
Especially when you can't trust them.
Yeah.
I still think Vegas is the favorite to win the Stanley Cup. Like, you know,
they're going
to
be the betting favorite.
And I think they're gonna, be the favorite to win the cup. But it's hard to, you know, you look at the team and you got. I hate the phrase "team of destiny" because I don't believe in it. I don't. I mean, the Canucks were a team of destiny in 2011, and look how that turned out. You know, everyone thought they were gonna win. Everyone thought they deserved to win. It didn't turn out that way. We got our 2011 thing right out of the way on the show.
Ding.
Our mention, but. You know, the way that Bobrovsky is playing and the way that Tkachuk keeps coming up huge in these games. Like, let's take a take a step far back from this series.
Okay.
Are the Panthers playing incredible hockey?
No.
Are the Panthers playing like, for example, Colorado played last season on the way to the Stanley Cup? No, you watch Colorado play last season, you're like, that is an amazing team. There is no way anyone is going to beat this team. Mm-hmm. They are winning the cup, and they did.
Yeah.
Florida is playing smart, very smart, tactically smart. And I've been critical of Paul Maurice before because I didn't think his teams were very disciplined in Winnipeg. But his team, he has coached a hell of a playoffs. He's been an unbelievable coach in identifying the issues that the Panthers have, making it easier for Bobrovsky. And Bobrovsky has taken advantage of that. But when I watch the Panthers play, and this is probably why Rod Brind'Amour was a little bit frustrated with some of the line of questioning after the game last night, I don't sit there and watch and go, like, man, the Panthers are dominating. What a team. This team's a wagon. Unbelievable. They're playing smart. Their goalie's making saves. And they got a guy in Tkachuk who is just scoring big goal after big goal.
So I know it was a four-game sweep, right? So one would say, well, it had to be a little lopsided. The stat last night that came from NHL Public Relations, consider four games and then one that went to quadruple overtime, right? The score was either tied or a one-goal game for the entire series except for 2 minutes and 40 seconds. So for 2 minutes and 40 seconds over the entire Eastern Conference Finals, there was a two-goal margin. Everything else was either one goal or tied. Like, that series could not have been played more even. Almost impossible. And can we play the Brind'Amour? Let's play the Brind'Amour because part of me agreed with what he was saying. I mean, this is about as thin as the series can get. I like the part where he said, we didn't really get swept, to which I responded, you kind of did, though.
You did because of all the four games you
lost. Right, because you won zero. So
follow-up comment followed by me running away from you.
Yeah.
You did, in fact, get swept.
Here's Carolina Hurricanes head coach.
Catch you real quick.
Yeah, that's true.
The best 3 seconds
full
ever,
sprint right off the podium.
Rod Brind'Amour on the sweep that wasn't really a sweep, but really was a sweep.
You know, that's the unfortunate part of this is he's going to look back and everyone's going to say he got swept. And that's not what happened. I watched the game. I'm there. I'm cutting the game. We're in the game. That we didn't get, we didn't lose four games. We got beat, but it's, you know, we were right there, and this could have went the other way, and this could have been four games the other way. And tonight, you know, the way it ended is tough. Getting a penalty like that, that's tough. You know, especially what was let go, and then you, that's gonna sting. But not to take anything away from the other team because they played hard, but. You know, I think we took a huge steps this year. You know, coming this far, like I said, with what we were missing is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and the Hurricanes were missing Svechnikov and Pacioretty and Teravainen for a lot of the playoffs. So we'll talk about the Hurricanes in a bit, but I still want to talk about Matthew Tkachuk because we all know it's been painful for Canucks fans to watch this guy become a superstar in the NHL, first with Calgary, and now with Florida in the postseason. But Flames fans must be apoplectic. There's another big word.
Big word.
Watching him in these playoffs. Because Canucks fans were used to it, right? Like, we've been like, yeah, we've had regrets for a few years.
We also never actually had Tkachuk.
Yeah, I mean, at least the Canucks didn't get dumped by Tkachuk.
That's a different ballgame altogether.
And when you hear Tkachuk talking about Paul Maurice and how Paul Maurice made it enjoyable to come to work, that's kind of a direct shot at the Calgary Flames under Daryl Sutter.
Did that brief reign of terror in Calgary, did it eventually end up destroying the whole thing?
100%.
Think about
100%.
It. 100%. Tkachuk, gone. Gaudreau, yep. Gone. Tree Living, gone.
Mm-hmm.
Markstrom, crumbled. I mean, you could lay a lot of this, if not all of it, at the feet of Daryl Sutter.
Well, and Jonathan Huberdeau coming in and not being a fit and not enjoying himself. Nazem Kadri apparently not very happy with Daryl Sutter as a head coach. Like, I do think it's somewhat salvageable. Oh, yeah. In Calgary, I wouldn't be surprised if next season they come back and they make the playoffs, because I still think they got a pretty good team, but they got some big decisions to make. And if Elias Lindholm, for example, says, I'm not re-signing here, so you better trade me Craig Conroy, then I might change my mind. But right now with the roster, I think they still got a pretty good team. But for Flames fans, watching this guy, who's still, what, 24, 25 years old? How old is Tkachuk? He's still a young guy. Like, he's mid-20s. Do this in the playoffs, knowing how Calgary's season must have gone, must be very, very difficult.
Matthew Tkachuk will turn 26 in December.
As for the game, people are going to complain about the penalty to Staal, and that includes me. I thought it was a ridiculous call to make at that time of the game.
I thought Brendan Moore was going to be more animated about it post-game. He mentioned it.
Yeah,
but he wasn't nearly as upset as I thought he would be.
But this is what we talked about when the Leafs fell down 3-0 to the Panthers. When you do that, when you're not able to stay afloat in a series, you have to have pretty much all the calls and the bounces go for you.
Yep.
Because there's no margin for error, and that's exactly what happened. You can complain about it, and you can even say that it was goalie interference. You know, Sam Bennett had a stick in there. I could see, you know, what, if there's 100 of those calls in the NHL, maybe 30 mm-hmm. end up being goalie interference. Like, I still can't figure out goalie interference, and frankly, I don't know if the refs can and the league can either.
Yep.
At the same time, when Tkachuk had that puck on his stick, you have to respect the composure that he showed. When he knows the clock is ticking down, he knows that the series and a trip to the Stanley Cup final is hanging in the balance, and he holds on to it, and he holds on to it, and he gets a better angle. He swings out in front of the net, and he just buries that. That is a guy that is mm-hmm. playing with so much confidence, knowing that when the puck is on his stick, good things are going to happen.
Maurice was crediting him. Do you remember that way back in the first round when he scored the OT winner against Boston, and he praised Tkachuk for holding on to the puck and not panicking in the big moment, right? And the big moment part is super important, because I don't remember a guy flipping the narrative on his postseason performance in one postseason like Tkachuk.
Yeah.
Because last year in Calgary, especially against Edmonton following game one, was how has this guy disappeared in the biggest yeah. moments, right? And it wasn't even like he was just doing okay in the biggest moments. It's that he completely evaporated. And now, I mean, I struggle to remember a guy that scored more big goals in a short period of time. Like this series, again, that was basically played at 50-50, neck and neck the entire time, he was the one difference maker. If you want to point it out, you can say, yeah, Bobrovsky was unbelievable for sure. But in a series where goals were super hard to come by, it really looked like Carolina lacked. I mean, Pacioretty's a poacher. That's what he's there for. So you miss him.
Mm-hmm.
You miss Svechnikov, guys that have given you big goals in the past. And Florida had it. Tkachuk just showed up every single time.
A few questions into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. If you have any questions, text them in. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you. In Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Budison Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. Morning, gentlemen. Is Sam Bennett's hit on Slavin considered dirty? Head-to-head contact, I feel for Slavin, didn't know where he was. No, that was a clean hit. That was a great hit. It was not a fun result.
Monstrous.
It was a terrific hit. And that must be drive Flames fans crazy, too. Like, Sam Bennett turned into the player he was supposed to be in Florida. That guy is a force out there. He's the type of player the Canucks need. The Canucks need a lot, but they need a player like him who's not only going to play physical, but is going to have a direct impact on his game, on the games with his physicality.
Yep.
You don't want to see a defenseman like Slavin get hurt, but when he's out on the ice, the other team has to keep its head up.
Yep. I mean, it's one of the biggest differences that Florida's had in all three of these series is they have that element with Gudas and Bennett and both of the Stahls and Lomberg where they've got a real physical presence and they arrive physically on time and with the intention of hurting someone. Honestly, that's what Sam Bennett does. A lot of the hits, right? Go back to the second round against Toronto where he took out Matthew Knies. You can go back to the first round where they were very physical to begin with. And I remember early in the playoffs when they were playing Boston was killing them on the power play. Mm-hmm. That was kind of their undoing as they were taking bad penalties. And I remember Duclair took a bad one. Lomberg took a bad one in that opening round. And I thought, well, this isn't going to work because especially against Boston, if you give them so many chances with the physicality, you're going to be in trouble. Lo and behold, it's become more and more of a weapon for them. By the way, on the subject of penalties, did you see how they called that game last night? Like, I get that people were complaining about the timing and the lateness of the third period penalty to Jordan Staal. It was kind of criminal in some ways, but the first period, even Steven. There were three penalties called against Florida. There were three called against Carolina. That formula continued in the second period. There was one power play each and in the third period. So I think if you're Carolina, you knew that in this game of even up, as stupid as this sounds, you knew that you were running the risk of having a penalty called on you at some point because that was game management, depending on how you look at it, at its finest or its worst. Like, that penalty was coming to Carol. I felt bad for Staal. I felt bad for Brind'Amour. You never like to see a game end on a power play with 4.9 seconds left when overtime's looming, but that's how the refs were calling that game. There were some calls, but it was always going to be evened up.
So the Panthers are off to their first Stanley Cup final since 1996, which was their third year in the league.
Ooh, Krupp, baby.
They lost that Stanley Cup to the Colorado Avalanche. Wasn't particularly close. But everyone threw rats on the ice and had a good time.
Wasn't the final game 1-0, if I'm not mistaken?
It might have been,
Uwe Krupp on the game winner,
It might be a similar score this year.
Florida has only made the playoffs like 8 times since 1996, and most of the time they've gone out in the first round. They've been a non-factor in Florida for a long time. Even last season when they won the President's Trophy, there was, I would say, limited excitement about the Panthers in that market.
Yeah.
And then they only last to the second round. This seems a little bit different. And I think Tkachuk is a big reason why. I think he's the type of star that could have a real impact in Florida, because, you know, people up here in Canada will say, like, Florida, like, what a terrible hockey market. They haven't had a chance. They really haven't. They have lost. They have constantly changed direction, and it's never seemed to pan out. It is now. And I think what you're seeing is a pretty enthusiastic fan base. I think the atmosphere has been great down in Sunrise. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, great hockey market now, right? But I think when you look at, say, Tampa Bay, you're looking at that market and going, well, that's a pretty good market. Well, yeah, because they've had success, right? They've done things the right way. And now the Panthers are doing things the right way, and they're doing it in a really exciting fashion. And barring a miracle comeback by the Dallas Stars in the Western Conference Series, which could be wrapped up tonight, there is going to be a first-time winner of the Stanley Cup. It's either going to Florida or it's going to Vegas. Now, as a Canucks fan, that probably makes you angry. Canucks have been in the league since 1970. No Stanley Cups. 3 trips to the Stanley Cup final. 3 games, in fact, to play for the Stanley Cup. They've lost them all. And now Florida, which has pretty much been a laughingstock of the league for its entirety of its existence versus Vegas, which is in its sixth year. One of those teams is going to win the Stanley Cup.
Florida was also so, well, reasonably close to being a SAD Club member, right? This is the 29th year of...
Well, they still could be. They've got another decade to go.
I'm exploring the topic that you put out there, that we're going to have a first-time winner. Now, Vegas would be wild. Two Stanley Cup finals appearances, and if they would win a Stanley Cup in their first 5 years of existence, pretty decent.
It's actually hard to pick a favorite in, if let's say it's Florida and Vegas in the Stanley Cup final, which I think it is going to be. Considering Jamie Benn's been suspended for two games, I think Dallas is done. Yep. Who knows, though? Yep. Let's say it is. On the one hand, I think the better team is Vegas.
Yes.
But on the other hand, Bobrovsky and Tkachuk. Is that the way you look at it?
Better team, Vegas, hotter team, Florida. And that's crazy to say because Vegas has been incredibly hot over the last little bit. They've won, what, five games in a row now.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at it and you're saying, it's weird that there would be a hotter team in the NHL than Vegas, but it would definitely be Florida. Because Florida's winning these games. Again, yes, Tkachuk, yes, Bobrovsky, but... I said this yesterday when we were previewing the game. They are so confident in these games where you shouldn't really have any confidence. Like, they're basically tie games all the time.
Yeah.
You should be playing with the inherent fear that the next goal is going to sink you.
Well, they just got that extra gear. Like, I know it's cliche, but that's just how they look out there. Like, they're like, they have that desire. Like, we want to win. We really, really, really want to win.
Well, I think the difference is between what you're saying is they think they know they can win.
Yeah.
Because they have Tkachuk and Bobrovsky.
Now, does Vegas have those two guys? I mean, I know Vegas, you're saying they're the favorites, but does Vegas have a Tkachuk and a Bobrovsky that just, they have that extra pushes them over
Stone
the edge?
Stone and Eichel have been terrific.
Yeah. They have, yeah.
They're way more of a balance.
Would you put them on equal footing with those two?
No, they're totally different teams. Like, if you look at Vegas' scoring right now, Eichel's been great, but Chandler Stevenson's been unreal. Mm-hmm. William Karlsson's been really good.
Yeah, Marcius, support.
Marchessault was unbelievable through the first three games against Dallas. Aiden Hill's been a nice story, but he only came in halfway through. I know Bob took over as well, but they're just totally different teams. It makes for a pretty fascinating matchup. Also very hot. You're going from the swamp to the desert. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a wet heat to a dry heat. Yeah. As for the Hurricanes, they've actually got some pretty big decisions looming this offseason. They can lock up Sebastian Aho to an extension like they did with Svechnikov. But the same goes for Teravainen and Martinuk and Pesci and Shea. Freddie Anderson is a pending unrestricted free agent. If they want to give a young guy like Seth Jarvis a long-term deal, they can. But at the same time, we all know how Carolina operates. And we spoke to their general manager, Don Waddell, a couple of months ago on this show. And we were having the conversation and asking him, like, is it fair to say you guys don't like making too many commitments, that you'd like to stay nimble and flexible, and that's one of your advantages as a franchise, and that's why you get opportunities like, oh, Brent Burns is available, or Max Pacioretty is available. Not that that one worked out particularly well, but having the cap space, having the flexibility, not painting yourself into a corner with too many contracts, some of which might turn bad. That's been an advantage for the Carolina Hurricanes. But now they've got to make some decisions on guys.
Yep. And I do.
Right?
Yeah. And
now they're at the point with a few guys, you know, when you've been in a relationship with someone for a while and they're like, are we getting married or what?
Well, but that's exactly it. That's exactly what they do. And they usually say, here are my stipulations. If you would like to agree to marriage, we can do it. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how they operate. It's not a great deal.
I would like to see other free agents.
Yeah, you know, in the instances of, like, it's hard to say that it didn't work out for them. It's when they, like, put it this way. They allowed a Norris-caliber defenseman in Dougie Hamilton to just play out the string and walk because they had a certain ceiling that they weren't willing to go over to keep him. And it's very uncommon in NHL circles for that kind of thing to happen, because NHL teams have a tendency to never really want to just relinquish a guy, right? What's the worst thing you can do is let assets walk for free, right? There's always the idea that you have to trade them before the contract expires, or you have to resign them, right? Never, no one ever really thinks about, well, what if we just let them go, right? I mean, look at the Calgary Flames with Johnny Gaudreau. That completely screwed them up when he left.
Yeah.
With Carolina, it was like, no big deal. We've got other guys. We got depth. They had like 12 guys that had double-digit goals this year. Now, that's a blessing and a curse because
You can only do that when you're a playoff team, though, right?
And but in the end,
you can't do that when you're like the Canucks. You can't let assets walk for free.
No, but I mean that. But they built to this point where they can, right? Remember, they did the same thing with Nedeljkovic and Net, where they're like, we have a certain limit that we're willing to go to monetarily in term.
Yeah,
if you're not willing to take it, see you later, because we'll find another guy. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that where they play. I think being in Carolina allows you to be incredibly patient where other markets maybe wouldn't necessarily allow it and have this approach where
I'd love to see what how a Canadian market would react to a team like Carolina. What would they be seen as? Would they be seen as a perennial playoff team that even wins a few rounds in the playoffs, like on the good? Like, would they be seen as way better than most teams, or would they be seen as, these guys cannot get over the hump in the playoffs?
Media jackals like you and I would chew this team up and spit it out.
Because we'd be
unfortunately.
Because I think the fans too would be pushing for that big move. You know, like, push for the move that pushes you over the top. Push to go out and get a guy like Matthew Tkachuk. Because these guys aren't getting it done.
This is the best of Halford and Brough. Download the full show through Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you're the best.
Halford and Brough.
To the phone lines we go. We are joined now by Rob Rossi of The Athletic in Pittsburgh here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you? Good morning to you.
Thanks for taking the time to do this. We appreciate it. We both really liked the article. It's up now at The Athletic if anybody listening hasn't read it. Chaos, Loathing, and the Big Three, How the Penguins Unraveled. Let's start with the big question here, Rob. How did it all go so wrong for Ron Hextall and Brian Burke?
Well, part of it was they took the job, right? The genesis of this dates back to Jim Rutherford's surprise resignation, which ironically led to him coming to Vancouver. But I caught the Penguins flat-footed during that pandemic-shortened season in 2021, and, you know, they were kind of in the process of looking at selling the team. They wanted to get a general manager in place right away instead of maybe waiting out that season with Patrick Alvin as their assistant, and they settled on Hextall and Burke, kind of created this role for Burke that was always kind of murky. And, you know, back then, their CEO, David Morehouse, you know, was telling candidates that interviewed for the job that they had to be willing to break up Crosby, Malkin, and Letang. Not necessarily to do it, but had to be willing. And Hextall was enthusiastic about that, as was Burke. They looked at it as like a real chance to sort of put their stamp on sort of the next era of Penguins hockey. And, you know, things change. And in Pittsburgh, what changed was ownership. Fenway Sports Group bought the team, and Fenway Sports Group looked at the business side of things and saw that, you know, their sponsors and their fans really liked those legacy players. They looked at the hockey end of things and said, those are still our best players. And they looked at the Sidney Crosby part of things and said, look, he's the biggest asset in the Penguins have. And, you know, though he wants to finish his career in Pittsburgh, if you start taking away his chances to keep a competitive team on the ice and leaving him with, you know, nobody that he is friends with on the team, well, that's not going to keep Sidney happy. So they made a business decision to say, look, we want to keep these guys here. And, you know, Hextall kind of begrudgingly did that. But then he kind of messed up the other part, which is building around those guys. And the Penguins this year had a real productive top six, and they had nothing else. And that's ultimately a big part of what led to the change.
So I want to go back a bit, but because I'm curious, who came up with the initial plan to split up the big three? Why did they want to do that? And did they consult Sid about that?
They did not consult Sid about that. Like I said, there had to be a willingness to do it. And Hextall had a plan to do it. And, you know, whoever did it was going to be seen as the bad guy in Pittsburgh. And he was willing to take that heat. But, you know, he was keen to build this team through the draft and through some younger players around Crosby. And I think it was probably a poor choice. There wasn't a fit there. I didn't think there was a logical fit for Hextall and the Penguins for a lot of reasons, but primarily because, you know, that was going to be something that didn't sit well with people. And I guess I've always looked at it as when you get the gift of sort of these great players, the rush to get rid of them, I never understood. Again, their previous CEO, David Morehouse, sort of, I think he felt like in a way that if he hired the GM that did that, he would be viewed even better because he would have hired the GM that, you know, took the Crosby, Malkin, Letang era from one cup to three, and then also was the guy that figured out how to transition them into the next great era of Penguins hockey. I think he maybe thought a little bit too much of, you know, himself as opposed to the guys that were actually doing the job of winning on the ice. But Crosby wasn't involved in that. And Crosby, you know, who is usually you know, he's the most accessible superstar we've ever had, but he doesn't always say a lot of things that are pointed. You know, he was very pointed over the previous two seasons about, look, I want these guys here. He said a lot. They know how I feel, management. Management knows how I feel. And when things got testy between Malkin and the Penguins last year, you know, it was Crosby and Mike Sullivan, their coach, that really stepped in and salvaged that. Because things were going off the rails there. And mm-hmm. I give Crosby a lot of credit. For a guy that doesn't like to be really involved in the sort of political side of things, he put his weight behind doing something he felt was best for one of his longest tenured teammate and a guy that he really felt needed to be part of the future. And he hasn't done that before or since, but he did it then. And I think that speaks to how valuable Malkin is to Crosby on a lot of levels.
Hey, Rob, can you take us through the writing of this piece? Cause it was just, it was terrific reporting, and it's the type of reporting that, you know, I love to read. I don't think there's enough of, in the hockey world. And I'm just curious how you went about doing it, when you started thinking about writing it, and how many people you had to speak to in order to get the story out there.
Yeah. Wow. I could do a whole show on that. Thank you. So where February, I think things were starting to go off the rails for the Penguins. The way it works at The Athletic is myself and Josh Yowie, we've covered the team together for a long time, both at The Athletic and other places. You know, we both had a feel for just stuff we were hearing behind the scenes. And we're both pretty good at keeping our editors in the loop. And what happened was, I should also say at the end of the year, we always do an autopsy story of sort of what happened. Mm-hmm. But this year, one of our editors, one of the editors, like the top editors at The Athletic, said, hey, things in Pittsburgh seem to be pretty weird right now. Do you guys think you could sort of do a story that details behind the scenes? And Josh and I were both keen to do that, but we felt it was the best thing to do was to do it at the end of the year. So I would say from late February on, we really started detailing like how we wanted to set the story up. And then, I think we ended up writing about five drafts of it. We had incredible help from two editors in specific, Mark Wollman and our direct editor, Alex Iniguez. And, what we did was we talked to a lot of people over the final 2.5 months of the season. We knew exactly what we wanted to talk to people about. And we gathered as much information as we could to supplement what we'd already reported and tried to figure out what was the most accurate and logical way to tell the story. And what we settled on was that it kind of started with the hiring of these guys and sort of the change in ownership and the tense negotiations last off season were all precursors of what we saw this season. After that, it just became a lot of like the slog of it was just trying to figure out whose voices we were going to use in the story, whether we were going to quote people directly or sort of write with authority based off what they had told us. We chose the latter. And our whole objective was just try to tell the story in a way that it was digestible to an audience outside of Pittsburgh, because we figured Pittsburgh readers, Pittsburgh fans would sort of know all the details. We had to make this for a bigger audience, because the way we saw it was this story of these three players that got what they wanted, which was to stay together, and then had to kind of go completely sideways on them.
I'm glad that you mentioned an audience outside of Pittsburgh, because the connections here to Vancouver are pretty obvious. So first, on the subject of Jim Rutherford, I know hypotheticals are tough and everything, but I did want to ask you, because I think you might have a good answer to it. How different would things have been if Rutherford had just stayed with the Penguins?
I think there's a chance the Penguins might have made at least a deep playoff run in 2022. He had kind of sneakily rebuilt this team to contender status again. And a lot of the players that Hextall ended up trading over those 2 years and that ended up being really good players for people elsewhere. And I think there would have been better communication throughout the organization. Certainly things wouldn't have been as chaotic. What's interesting to look from afar in Vancouver is the Jim we know here, he's got a gambler's hand when it comes to making trades, but he's a very calm presence. He was a calming presence for the Penguins. It seems like that hasn't been the case out in Vancouver. I don't know the details of that, but I think the Penguins would probably be, I don't know if they would have won another championship, but I think they would still be considered among the elite of the NHL if Rutherford had stayed, because I think he understood the types of players that Crosby, Malkin, and Letang needed around them.
You know, you got to cover Jim Rutherford for a long time. We were actually having the conversation earlier about difference in markets, and he made the conscious decision at one point to zip it. Those were his words, where he realized that speaking publicly, often as candidly as he did, might not have been the best strategy. I think that was significantly different in Pittsburgh. What are some of your memories of recollections of the Jim Rutherford that presided and led that Penguins group?
It's funny, because so Jim came from Carolina, right? And his first, when they introduced him, I asked the first question. And the first question I asked him was, Jim, respectfully, your teams in Carolina missed the playoffs the last 5 years you were there, and you've never managed a team that spent to the cap. What makes you think you're the right guy to lead the Crosby Malkin era? And, he had a really direct answer for it. And then I met with him in his office after the press conference, and I thought he was going to chew me out. I was expecting a tense conversation. And he sat down and I sat down and he laughed. And I said, "What's so funny?" And he goes, "It's going to be different here than it is in Carolina, I guess." And then he gave me his phone number. And he said, "You can call me anytime you want." He goes, "If I can't talk, I'll just tell you I can't talk, but I believe in being open. I don't see any reason not to be open about things." And that's what it proved to be. And sometimes he stepped in it. Like, he stepped in it here once with Evgeny Malkin, where, you know, Malkin was so mad that he called me up and said, "Hey, come over to Russia for a week, and I want to get some things off my chest." But because Jim was a good – because Jim's an excellent communicator internally and a willing communicator outward, most of the times in Pittsburgh, there was consistent messaging. Again, I'm not in Carolina. I don't know things. I know this. In Pittsburgh, we've never had ownership that has been too involved in the process. They'll step in when they need to. They're consulted a lot. But even Fenway, like, they let their team – they let their management run the team. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know what the ownership situation is in Vancouver, but the Jim I know, this was kind of a right fit for him. I think going to a market in Canada, my perspective over 20 years is doing this is, in Canada, it's a kind of like covering the NFL in America, where anything that's said becomes a huge story when it comes to the NHL. That's not necessarily the case in the U.S. markets, even in Pittsburgh, where hockey matters.
Yeah, we can do a 3-hour show on a fourth liner saying he would like two more minutes of ice time.
Yeah.
And wondering how that's going to affect the team culture going forward.
And I love that. I love that. I think most of the people that are hockey people, and I consider myself one, love that. But, I mean, I'm always amazed when I hear players who are Canadian, some of whom played for their hometown, talk of coming to the States to play as a relief, because it's not like that their privacy is invaded or anything. It just seems like some of them get worn down by the constant analysis of everything. And you don't get that in the United States with hockey. You do get it in the NFL. I think it's great when you get it. I wish it was more like that in the States, but I also could see how that can be different. And Jim, you know, Jim worked in Raleigh was a small market. Pittsburgh's a mid-sized market. Vancouver's a giant market. And there's a big difference.
Going forward, what do you think is going to happen with the Penguins? Kyle Dubas's name is out there. And then I would love to hear your thoughts on Mike Sullivan's role going forward, because he seems to be a pretty powerful head coach and have a lot of influence with ownership. That's what you wrote, that Mike Sullivan has influence with Fenway Sports. So how is that a challenge for whoever the new general manager is?
I don't know. I guess I look at it this way. It's not like a secret, right? It's an open secret, right? That Sullivan's got a lot of sway, but Sullivan's also a really good coach. Like, if the Penguins fired Sullivan tomorrow, there'd probably be 25 teams that would be willing to fire their coach to get him. Considering now everything that everybody knows, what was going on the last year and a half in Pittsburgh, the fact that they only missed the playoffs by a point, I think speaks to how well he, you know, kept things going despite everything sort of swirling around. But, you know, if it is Dubas, and I believe it's going to be Dubas's job if he wants it, I think they're going to go in there looking to build a partnership with Sullivan. And I will say this, Sullivan has been at his best when he's had a general manager who's communicated with him and sometimes disagreed with him. What Sullivan struggled with Hextall was the lines of communication weren't there.
Do you think it's possible for the Penguins to build a Stanley Cup caliber team while Sidney Crosby is still on the team, just considering ages of everyone? Sid's 35, Geno's 36, Letang is 36 as well. They got Jeff Petrie there who's 35. You know, so there's limited time. Do they have the ability to build a Stanley Cup contender while Sid is still there?
Well, I guess I'll say three things. Do we think Sidney Crosby's capable of doing in a postseason at this age what Matthew Tkachuk is doing now? I think the answer is still yes. Do the Penguins need a lot of work? Yes. But have we seen that in this league, teams can do a lot of work quickly? And also, have we seen that teams can kind of just get in and get hot? Yeah, we've seen that. So yeah, I think it is possible. I don't know that it'll be expected. I don't know that it's a reasonable expectation, but was Florida going to the Cup final a reasonable expectation this year? I understand the circumstances are different, but this more than any sport, I think, is one that is conducive to sort of maybe not the most obvious team winning the championship. Mm-hmm. And lastly, I've just learned that even though I'm not a gambler, anybody that bets against Sidney Crosby usually doesn't come out for the better on that. He's a pretty motivated guy. He's still a top center in this league. I think he's the best leader in the sport. And I know those guys are very motivated after missing the playoffs to get back. And, you know, one thing that Penguins haven't been in Sidney Crosby's tenure is a team that didn't have expectations. And so I'm kind of fascinated to see what they're going to do with a chip on their shoulder.
Rob, thanks for joining us today. Please pass along our regards to Josh, who helped you on the piece.
I will.
It was terrific reporting, and thanks for your insight today. I hope we can chat again soon.
Yeah, and look, Jimmy will talk again someday. Don't worry.
Someday. Yeah, okay.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
Bye.
Rob Rossi from The Athletic in Pittsburgh. Great interview there. Be sure to put that one on the best of later on when it airs at 11. then possibly again tonight. Who knows? That's the best part about Sportsnet 650. We keep you guessing. It's interesting.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Well, so Rob Rossi is a fixture in Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
And when Halford and I would go and cover the Stanley Cup Final, which they were in back-to-back years, I remember being in a press conference in Pittsburgh and be like, who's that guy
Rob
who's asking those
intense.
Questions?
Yeah.
Like,
super intense.
He runs the pressers.
We could probably just do a three-hour show with Rob talking about what he just talked about, and he would fill that entire 3 hours with interesting stories.
Yeah, because he's – okay, here's the thing. He's got like real legitimate reporter slash journalist instincts. He just applies them to hockey. If that makes sense. Like, some guys get into this industry like us because we're like, yeah, we like hockey. I like lots of sports. But I'm primarily an enthusiast of that, sports, being a fan, that kind of thing. When you see someone – and I've met a handful of them before.
You're like an actual reporter.
Someone that has a – and I went to journalism school, for God's sakes.
How do you get a source?
Yeah. Is there like
– source? What is that?
Is there like a Craigslist that I can buy one? Like, I don't know. But
do you have to talk to people? Because I'm a bit shy.
I don't like doing that. I don't like confrontation. I don't like asking people hard questions, right? But there's been a handful of them throughout like working, and especially when we were like on the beat doing the Stanley Cup Final and everything, like embedded – reporters who like they have no problem doing the tough work and asking the tough questions. And Rob is like 100% that guy.
And they get to the point where even if like the story about Malkin reaching out to Rob and saying, come over to Russia. I've got some things that I want to get off
it's
my
a,
chest.
It's incredible.
How and I trust you and I trust you to tell the story.
That's crazy.
Right?
That article that he's alluding to is fantastic.
Terrific. Yeah.
Like he just hung out with Malkin in Russia for a week.
So cool.
And I mean, part of it was like Malkin's like, you're good with the words. You say what I want to say, right? Now that's a big part of it as well, is earning his trust. But so there's a lot of takeaways from there. The Rutherford stuff's hilarious because, you know, he went from Carolina to Pittsburgh and he's like, Pittsburgh's different. And now he's in Vancouver and he's like, damn, this is even more different than Pittsburgh.
This porridge is too hot.
Yeah, basically. And you see him now having to show the type of restraint that he didn't have to in Pittsburgh because he had a relationship, especially with Rob, and I know this because I've heard countless, like they had a at times adversarial relationship, but in Pittsburgh, like, he could duke it out and Rob and the other Josh would write what they would write. And then it would just kind of, the story would move on. The narrative would move on.
Well, and then also the market would be like, and then the market would be like, what's going on with Ben Roethlisberger?
Right.
Yeah.
And the market had the ability to move on.
And here's the kicker though, the big difference. He won Stanley Cups. Say what you will about what he did prior to or afterwards. I'm talking about Rutherford. Rutherford delivered 2 Stanley Cups. Yes. He inherited Crosby and Letang and Malkin. But everyone there in Pittsburgh, and I know this having covered those series, has a ton of respect for the moves that he made.
Yeah, great moves.
Especially the 1 year when Letang was out and he rebuilt a blue line that won a Stanley Cup. Ton of respect for it. When you do that, you almost have a lifetime pass, right? Even because he left under very odd circumstances. Mm-hmm. And they still say, you know what? Like we've talked to Gentile about this before, too. His legacy in Pittsburgh is always going to be he didn't just inherit a team and then walked his way to 2 cups. He had to do some serious work, especially bringing in Ron Hainsey and Trevor Daley and figuring out how they were going to build a blue line that could win a Stanley Cup, and did it.
This is the best of Halford and Brough. Download the full show through Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.